Broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Learning Insights, featuring learning professionals improving performance to drive business results.
Welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Learning Insights. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning, as is almost always the case with this show, is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are things in your world?
I am doing really well. I mean, Holly's back on the road, but, you know, there's positives and negatives to every situation, so I get to eat what I want and watch what I want when Holly's on the road. And we've got an exciting week this week. We have Learning Insights, which we always look forward to, brought to us by our friends at Training Pros. But we also have a remote broadcast tomorrow
that's
night, right?
WIT Connect, Women in Technology.
So that's going to be fun. We get to bring the bike flags and the banner and all that.
To the Georgia
cool
Aquarium.
But this is going to be a fantastic segment. We have with us on Learning Insights this morning, Director of Training and Development with Aptian, Mr. Chris Whitaker. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Aptian is high-tech software. What are you guys doing, and who do you do it for?
So Aptian is an enterprise application software company with 9,000 customers, over 9,000 customers in 100 countries across the globe. Our primary area of focus would be ERP, CRM, and SCM solutions.
A-okay.
That's
right. A lot of acronyms. Can you spell a couple of those out, though, for us?
Absolutely. So ERP would be Enterprise Resource Planning Systems, CRM, Customer Relationship Management, and then SCM would be Supply Chain Management. And that we are, Aptian is a fairly new entity, but we are the result of a merger between Consona Corporation and CDC Software.
So now, when you go to the market, how did you get to be so global? Through that merger?
Well, through a number of acquisitions and mergers over a few decades. We're a unique entity in that many of our products were actually acquired overseas. So we have some solutions that were actually originally developed in places like the UK, China, and other parts of the world.
So now from a training and development standpoint, how do you kind of deal with that? That seems like each one of those had their own little systems and ways of doing things, and then you guys bring them all together, and then now you got to kind
of
manage
it. The acronyms work across the lines, though.
Really?
Even in Chinese, it's still CRM, right?
That's right. That's absolutely right. But I would say for us, and that's been one of our huge opportunities as an organization, is to figure out exactly how we streamline systems and processes to ensure that there is a level of consistency in how we go to market, regardless of the product.
Right. So there's an Aptian way of doing things.
Absolutely.
A Whitaker / Aptian way.
I like the way you think.
So what's the backstory? How did you fall into this line of work?
So for me, my original career was in sales and sales management, and eventually got swayed away from a career in telecom to work for Achieve Global. And so that started my official career in learning and development.
So, I mean, that's a real pedigree, Achieve Global. That's a huge, well-known, highly respected training firm. You really did get a chance to learn a lot there, I'm sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. And starting off in sales and then provided me with an opportunity to transition into other positions that allowed me to grow, I would say grow exponentially. So working for also PDI Ninth House, as an example, as an implementation consultant.
Man, this guy, you don't know as much as I do since I'm married to a learning type person, but this really is quite the pedigree here. This guy's got some background. That's fantastic. So topics, the kinds of things that are in the curricula, what are you training these people on?
Wow, it's a wide variety of things. I would say that for us, if you think about any functional group within the organization, so that would include sales, product management, our engineering and R&D organization, professional services. We're providing training solutions for all of those individuals across the enterprise globally.
Engineering. Have you ever tried to train a group of engineers, Lee?
I'm sure they're easygoing and go with the flow.
So what are some of the unique challenges? Because I got to believe there are some, and you have the context to compare it to other broader audiences that you've worked with before with your experience with Achieve Global. What are some unique challenges in working with engineers, R&D type folks, software, really smart people? Is that what I'm trying to say? People that might be smarter than you?
Absolutely. And you know, you hit the nail on the head. Whenever you engage in an interaction with anyone within the organization, the first assumption you have to make is that the person you're talking to is at least as smart as you and quite possibly smarter. And so what that requires is, one, a level of confidence, but also a level of humility and openness. And I would say that that really drives the quality of the relationships that we have within the company. And it's that openness to their expertise, while at the same time being grounded in solid best practices and techniques for learning and development, both at the individual as well as at the organizational level.
Now, I bet your sales background helped you develop the training for the sales organization. Is that true?
It did. It did. And, you know, that's an interesting line to walk. One, when you know a lot about it, you it gives you a level of credibility and a solid foundation. But the danger in that is being overconfident and assuming that your way is the best way or the only way. And so, but yeah, it does. It allows to, it allows one to look beyond just traditional training, but then also to look at what are some of the softer things that have to occur in order for someone to be successful in that role. Things like resourcefulness. And so how then do you embed that in the training and development process so that people learn to be resourceful? I don't know of too many courses that just teach resourcefulness. And so it's an ongoing and iterative process within the learning and development chain of events, I guess.
Now, what are the challenges when you have these disparate groups who are other, you know, kind of independent organizations, then they become under the Aptean umbrella, and you're trying to teach kind of an Aptean sales methodology or an Aptean sales, you know, philosophy? How do you kind of move them from what they had been doing to the Aptean way?
I would say for me, it's been constant communication and clarifying of expectations. So as we look at the organization becoming one entity, Aptean, and having a single go-to-market strategy, it has really been about making sure that everyone is crystal clear on the vision as to where we're headed, and then also what's the process for getting there, and reminding people that they have a contribution to make, not just from a daily work perspective, but then also recognizing that Aptean is the sum total of all of our disparate entities, and that everyone has contributed to our past success and will contribute to our ongoing success. So keeping that in the forefront is always important, and I think that allows for a level of buy-in that that makes things work. But I will also say that it can't just be verbally communicated. People have to see it. It has to be tangible as well. So they have to see where they exist in the organization today and moving forward.
So 9,000-plus employees.
No, 9,000 customers.
9,000 customers.
1,500 employees.
1,500 employees. But with that many, certainly there's no shortage of training work to be done. There's probably a great many needs expressed. Do you have some structured methodology for prioritizing the needs and deciding what you're going to do when? Or is it all just on the Whitaker whim?
No. That wouldn't fly, and I don't think it would work.
Yeah, so how do you decide? Because everybody wants their thing, right? If I'm a sales manager, I want the sales training. Drop everything, get my stuff together, right?
Again, I think it goes back to constant communication and clarity around, one, what needs to be done, and then also prioritizing it. And that's, then you get there based on ongoing communications and conversations with the executive team, as well as other key constituents like our parent company, Vista Equity Partners. They are a very hands-on private equity firm that helps us to make sure that we're focused on the right things at the right time.
Equity partners like to stay plugged in, don't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Some more so than others.
So now when you're developing this kind of overarching strategy with the executive team, how does that kind of happen?
So I would say that it happens a couple of different ways. So one, it's the water cooler conversations that occur. And for me, just based on the pace of change that exists within our organization and where we are, it's also about making sure that a one-off discussion doesn't exist solely as a one-off discussion, that it's also about bringing other people into the loop and making sure that, again, there's that shared understanding of where we are and where we're headed, and also establishing a level of credibility as a business professional and not just a learning professional, so that you have a seat at the table with those senior managers.
So methods, being a global organization, 1,500 employees, it's probably not all stand-up training, right? Some of it delivered electronically, or how does that work?
Yeah, so some of it is stand-up training. Some of it is instructor-led virtual training, in addition to self-paced e-learning solutions as well.
And where's the content coming from? Are you going outside and sourcing that, or do you have internal people and you draw out the, you know, from old Sam, because he really knows this stuff, and you lock him in a room and just draw it out of him?
It's both and. So we wind up developing some level of content inside of the organization, both for instructor-led training as well as our, some of our online solutions. But then we also go outside of the organization identifying key strategic partners that add value to the business. Some of that comes from, you know, my background and experience with some of my former coworkers. It also it stems from my knowledge of some of the people or some of the entities out there that provide a good bit of value. And then I would say the last area would be for us, it's coming from Vista Equity Partners. They have a pool of resources that they allow us to leverage and that they've developed relationships with over the years as well.
Now, can you share some tips on how to deal with that global audience where you have just cultural differences, you know, and you have time zone challenges? There's a lot of challenges when you're dealing with a global organization than one that's based in one, you know, time zone.
Yes, I would say a big part of it is, and I've said this already, but communication and clarity. It's making sure that everybody knows what is, because I hate to steal it, but
no, it's true.
It really is that, and it's a constant clarifying of and confirming of understanding, both for you as well as the people you're working with. And I would also say, back to another word that I've used a few times, and it's an openness. It's an openness to good content and good ideas originating outside of the U.S. and recognizing that sometimes when you're a U.S.-based company and you go global, there is a perception within your employee base that is colored by both the corporate, you know, being corporate or HQ, and then I would say there's also something that gets colored because we're Americans, and you have to be aware of that and to sometimes sift through it to get to a place that works for everyone.
Now, how do you capture, like, say something great and innovative and worth sharing is happening in Europe? How do you take that and find that, like, nugget and then take that and then, it, you know, spread it throughout the rest of the company? Because good stuff's happening all over the globe, like you were saying, and it's easy to be kind of corporate-centric, that we're the smart guys and we're telling you all what to do. You want to be able to grab the great stuff that's happening all around. That's one of the values that having all these entities all over the world are, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and that occurs through one-on-one discussions, focus groups, open lines of communication, and I would even say being local when you can. A good example of what you just described was I had a trip earlier this year to India, and while I was in India, I saw two programs that our group in India had developed and were implementing locally to meet immediate needs that I saw immediate application across the globe. And at that point, it starts to be about how do you engage these people not only to provide you with the materials, but also how can we proactively engage them in the delivery of that content and also spreading the word.
I haven't been. Have you been to India, Lee?
No,
I haven't either. What's it like over there? What's the business culture? Does it all kind of mashed together with the social culture, or is it very distinct? You know, business is 9 to 5, and then we go do our cultural stuff. Or what was it like?
So, I would say because there is so much outsourcing in India, there is a distinction between business life and home life, as it were, or the social dynamics that occur outside of the workplace. There's a level of conformity that has to exist, or conforming to Western business values and practices that you will see. And I would say that can sometimes lull you into a false sense of security. And because there is such a large English-speaking population, and in southern India where I was, English is actually the unifying language, not Hindi.
Really?
And so because of the high level of fluency in English, again, it's easy to forget that this is a different culture. And so separate from some level of orientation towards Western thinking and Western knowledge and understanding and proficiency in English, there's also that recognition that there are cultural norms that ultimately find their way into the workplace, and that as a peer of theirs, you have to be aware of it and know that part of your communication and interaction is being colored or impacted by those cultural realities that, you know, that are just embedded in people.
Now, I suspect that's not necessarily unique to India. Like in right. China, they kind of put on a little bit of an Americanized hat for their business work, but still some Chinese culture is going to make its way even into that environment that you better be aware of if you're from our side of the world.
Absolutely. And we happen to be a unique entity in this way. CDC Software, one of the legacy companies, was actually the first Chinese company to be publicly, we were part of CDC Corporation, which was the first Chinese company to be publicly traded in the U.S. And so understanding those cultural influences on the business, a reality for many people within the organization.
And let's take the Indian learner, the Chinese learner. Do you have to shift the treatment of the training for them as well?
To some extent, yes. And it's understanding when one really needs to and when one doesn't. And that occurs over time, and it's often an iterative process.
I'll bet.
And again, constant communication with the people in the know in that part of the world and tapping into their expertise as well.
Now, are you traveling all over to all of the different entities that you guys are working with now in order to learn and create these relationships so you can have those open lines of communication?
So to some extent, my role in my department within the organization started when I started, which was last July. And so to the extent that I can get out in the field and interact and engage those constituent, you know, our constituencies, I do. But then in addition to the visiting local or to going on site, there are also a number of calls that occur and interactions that occur at conferences as well as virtually over the phone and WebEx, et cetera.
Now, I would imagine that like that example you gave about the group in India, when you learn something there and then you kind of share it with the rest of the organization, those people in India feel a sense of pride. And then the other people around the globe kind of feel like, wow, they're really kind of putting boots on the ground and really learning from us from what we're doing. And it makes them more open to all, you know, from a philosophical standpoint.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. And it also forces a concept that I think is really important. It's reciprocity. And so once they feel like you're giving and they're giving and receiving.
And you're listening.
You
know,
exactly.
Not just, you know, you're not just telling, you're listening.
Absolutely.
And you're actually acting on what they're doing. I mean, that would make it more meaningful, I would think.
Absolutely. It does. It does. And it shows, I think, what it ultimately drives, not just from a learning perspective, but to where I think you're headed with it is the overall business value and cultural benefits that the organization is going to receive. If people feel valued in the workplace, then, of course, their level of commitment is higher as well as their contribution.
Right. People want to be heard.
That's right.
That is a fact. Otherwise, you and I wouldn't get to do this stuff, would we? So let's look at this through the employee lens for a little bit, if we could. I'm an employee of Aptian. Is there a way for me to tap into the curriculum and look at things that I might want to access for my own professional growth? And then is there some process for going to my manager and saying, hey, I'd really like to take this course or that? Or how does that work?
Well, currently what we're in the process of doing is implementing a sum total LMS, which will allow our employees to...
Learning management system.
That's Lee. Right. Yeah, that's right.
Course.
Learning management system. And what that will allow our employees to do is actually to engage with the curricula that we currently have in place. And the system itself will be automated as such that an employee has an opportunity to, one, request learning and then have their manager automatically approve it or approve it, you know, when time permits.
That's fantastic. So how do you go about choosing an LMS? Because, I mean, what criteria do you have in mind as you're thinking that through?
So for us, it was a fairly easy decision because our LMS provider is also a sister company under the Vista portfolio.
They're a software company.
Keep it all in the family, right?
That's right. That's right.
So what's next for you guys? Where you got some projects that you're allowed to talk about or the next thing? I mean, we're talking about the LMS thing. You're getting to get that fine-tuned. But what else you got on your agenda?
I would say that's probably the biggest thing for us right now is rolling out the learning management system because it will also integrate with our performance management system as well, allowing for, you know, true employee engagement for the balance of the year. So aligning learning activities with business goals and objectives and performance expectations for the employees. That's the biggest thing we have currently underway today. And I think for us, it's always, as a Vista company, it's anticipating the next acquisition. So it's preparing ourselves for the next merger, the next acquisition to facilitate ongoing organic and inorganic growth.
So that's immediate training need whenever you make an acquisition, I bet, right?
Absolutely.
You got like a whole brand new population.
It's good job security.
Yeah, no kidding. So you love the M&A guys, right?
Love them.
So now for you personally, what is the bigger challenge like dealing with the different personalities of sales versus engineering or just the fact that it's global?
I would say the fact that it's global. Because as much as we have the differences, you know, from sales to, you know, in sales versus engineering, I would say that that gets exponentially more difficult as you move out into the regions because the needs from a sales perspective vary from region to region. And so I would say that that's probably the bigger issue or challenge.
Well, I'm sure this doesn't happen at your firm, but I have a very good friend in the software business who is a top performing salesperson, and he refers to engineering as sales prevention. So I'm sure you never hear that your shop, right?
You know, one of the things that I would say we're actively working towards as an organization is ensuring that there is a high level of communication at the top and then I would say at all levels throughout the organization to ensure that we don't have that mentality. It has existed, I would say, in some of our legacy organizations, but it's something that we're actively working to break down some of those barriers.
Now, is the leadership of your company more engineering-oriented or sales-oriented? Because you're sales-oriented.
Yeah, I would say as an organization, we're definitely sales-oriented.
But the continuum that you must run, because you're providing training in sales and communication and all these kinds of things, but are you also providing very nuts and bolts, here's how you use this piece of software training, or here's how you talk about this piece of software training?
So the how you talk about it part, yes. The actual how to use the software, we actually have an education department that's responsible for customer-facing training, and we also, and a lot of that is taken care of out of our professional services organization.
So you have a whole nother group dedicated to that. I mean, you guys are well-heeled. That's fantastic. So what's your favorite part? What do you like the best about your work?
I would say for me in my current role, it's the ability to impact the business. I would say that when I think about us, my department, one of the things that I constantly promote is that we're not just a training department. We are enablers of improved performance. And thinking about what that means is pretty broad. So for my group, it's not just about delivering a training solution. It's also about making sure that there's clarity across the organization. If we identify a misalignment, it's our responsibility to then connect people with people to create alignment, clarity, and understanding, and a shared vision and a shared approach to doing things. And so that's been, I would say, the most exciting, going outside of the traditional bounds of learning and development to truly focus on driving performance, clarity, and alignment.
Has anything happened that you're especially proud of? Any innovation or anything that you've done that you're...
Beyond securing this interview? Yeah. I don't know how you're going to top that, but...
Yeah, you know, I'm at a loss of words just thinking about that part again. Anything I'm particularly proud of? You know, if I had to say anything, it would be I'm proud of the people that I have an opportunity to work with. One of the things that I've recognized, I had a fairly steep hill to climb when I first joined the organization with some high expectations. And for me, it was very humbling to receive the assistance I did from others within the organization who really had, at the time, no real reason for supporting the learning and development group. And so I think the high point for me would be engaging those people, being open to their help, and then receiving, you know, their help was the biggest thing for me.
So how do you go about developing your own team? I mean, maybe there's some formal training for that as well, but there's got to be some informal training in developing the people in your own department to work with this system. Speak to that a little bit, if you would.
Absolutely. So I would say that it's a combination of formal learning and development, which we've done, as well as informal learning and development, in addition to coaching. And I think the coaching is multidirectional. So it's peer-to-peer coaching, which I encourage and I would say in many ways mandate. And then there's also top-down and bottom-up coaching, of course, that occurs as well. And then I also – there's an expectation from me that we are learning from other people within the organization, as well as our peers and our partners outside of the company.
Is there a mentoring program?
Within the learning and development organization?
Right.
Within the learning and development organization right now, I would say there's not a formal mentoring program.
But it's encouraged?
Encouraged, for sure.
Well, I got to tell you, peer-to-peer can be so powerful. Obviously, you recognize that. And this coaching behind any formal training, that's absolutely critical. Is that something – I know the answer. I don't want to know if it's true. I want to know how. How do you go about instilling out in the field, look, we're going to come do this great training – but, you know, we don't want you guys to untrain them
right
after we train them. Is that more informal, or is there more structured training to teach them how to coach behind it? Or
there is the formal, there's the formal aspects of that, but then there's also the accountability that I think is also has to be both formal and informal, which is an expectation of the managers to actually do it. And one of the ways that we get there as an organization is by engaging managers and senior leaders in the process of developing and designing training. And we make, you know, we make it explicitly clear that performance only occurs with good content and even better coaching. And so the expectation is established on the front end, and then, of course, there always has to be some level of inspection on the back end to ensure it's happening. And we drive at honest discussions. If something's not working in the field, then training may have a part to play in that, or management may have a part to play in that, or we both may have a part to play in that. And so getting to those honest levels of discussion are important, and avoiding finger-pointing as well as, I would say, avoiding responsibility and accountability for everyone's success.
Right. So accountability, you have metrics for success regarding to keep them on track?
Absolutely. So we do, from a metrics perspective, there are a number of things that we currently have in place and things that we're also looking to institute. So we do level one, level two, of course, evaluations, and also level three. So then there's that inspection of what's actually occurring in the field to see if one, the training has been effective and if the coaching has been effective. And then we also look at key performance indicators for the organization and how those translate into individual metrics as well, and make sure that there's that alignment and that we're tracking and monitoring those to ensure success.
You know, you spoke early in the conversation about having a seat at the table, and obviously that's absolutely critical. And I can sense a big reason that you do is because you really do lean on genuine business drivers to decide what you're going to train, or you're going to train, what you're going to train, and you have a genuine focus on impact. All very much easier to say than do.
Yes, for sure.
I would think. So what I'd like to ask you as we wrap up is, what counsel, if any, would you offer someone in a similar role in an organization that doesn't have all this quite as well buttoned down? Maybe they're dealing with multiple constituencies, possibly global. They may or may not have the executive level of sponsorship that you obviously do. They may not have the resources you do, or they may not be able to pick up the phone and call SMEs
right.
in all these places. But I don't know, maybe a do and a don't, or just some general advice that you might offer someone in that situation that's kind of on the path to where you already are.
Sure. I would say being grounded and understanding the business needs of the organization and the drivers. And that allows you to speak in a way that is meaningful to leaders within the organization, and they get a sense that you understand and get them and the organization. An example would be, as we were ramping up our sales boot camp last year, there's this adherence to learning best practices that's ingrained in any T&D professional, training and development professional. And for me, in working with sales leadership and Vista, it was being clear on what the business needs were as well as the training needs. So one of our key business needs was to have a process in place for onboarding new salespeople. And in truth, that was more important at the time than having the absolute best training program. So they were more concerned with, Chris, do you have a solid program that we can have in place to onboard these people, and we recognize that it's not going to be perfect, and we'll seek perfection at a later date, but give us what we need now. And it was that understanding and that honest discussion that allowed us to meet the business needs of the organization to onboard the right number of people last year, that gave us credibility with the senior team, and then that focus on continuous improvement and an expectation around continuous improvement that allowed us to be honest and true to our profession.
Yeah, that's a great philosophy of get something there that's, you know, almost perfect, but instead of just waiting until it's perfect, then there's no action takes place.
Yeah, and again, it really is about meeting the business, understanding and meeting the business needs of the organization.
Right, where it's at today, though.
Yes,
not just sitting here and let's create this perfect thing and then we'll roll it out when it's perfect, and then, you know, years are going by.
Absolutely, that's right, that's right.
Well, Chris, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this morning, man. You're welcome back anytime. This is fun and informative.
You. Thank you. Much appreciated. I enjoyed myself as well.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this morning, Chris Whitaker, Director of Training and Development for Aptian, and our friends over at Training Pros, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you next week on Learning Insights.